First thing is I stay off Instagram. There's lots of cool stuff out there and it gets lots of clicks and lots of likes. Unfortunately, it probably doesn't have a strong scientific basis. They all said, you're just good enough to not be good enough. One of the sayings with my staff is, if you're not excited to be here, why would anybody else be?
It's true.
You know, so I think enthusiasm goes a really long way. If you're gonna do something, attack it.
Welcome back to another episode of the Chats with Clark podcast. I'm your host, Joe Clark, and here at Chats with Clark, we don't do poppy intros, we get straight to the point. And the point of today's episode, episode 78, is Tom Rini.
78, wow.
Right?
Pretty cool.
Tom is the founder of the gym and fitness group Black Flag Strength and Conditioning, a 2011 John Carroll University Athletic Hall of Fame nominee, the renowned former strength coach at St. Ignatius High School, where his family name reigns strongly. Tom Rini, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah,
appreciate
thanks for being.
Thanks for having me. Yeah. I mean, I didn't know you were going to throw all that out at me.
Well, I mean, when you have such a repertoire, I got to throw it out there, right?
I guess so. Another cool addition to that is, I think the season before, the 97 team at Carroll was inducted into the Hall of Fame at Carroll as well.
Oh my gosh. So, you were.
Yeah, so
captain,
luckily,
right?
I get to be in there twice. So my son, who's a junior, is going to be a junior there every time I'm there. We have to take a walk down the new hallway and show him just to
look who it is.
Yeah. You recognize that guy?
Yeah, right.
Give him that kind of bit. But
give him a little bit of, you know, where
thank you very much for the nice intro. I appreciate it.
Amidst all that, Tom, my first question for you is, what is the best thing that there is to know about you?
I'm fiercely dedicated and passionate about what I do and about people and about helping people. And I've just chosen, after years of kind of doing this now and realizing that, you know, my mission in life is to serve others through health, wellness, fitness, strength, conditioning, whatever you want to call it. It's why I started in the late 90s and have kind of kept my foot in it all the way through. It's evolved over the years in terms of my mindset. You know, it's when you're younger, it's lift heavy and move fast and do all those things. But as I get older, I there's certainly significant value in enhanced cardiovascular fitness and increasing strength and building high quality muscle and all the physical things that come along with it and all the health and wellness things that come along with it. But just being able to interact with people in a very vulnerable position when they come in here a lot of times, and being able to serve them through that and have a connection with that there's nothing else like it. I mean, I spend more time with these people than their doctors, than their lawyers, than their accountants, a lot of times even than their families. You know, they come in every single day. And so it's a role that I don't take lightly, because, you know, they are coming to us to help them live a better life, you know? So anyway, yeah, so I'm fiercely passionate about what I do, and the people I get to work with.
Those people that you talk about that are coming in here to Black Flag, where we are now, again, thank you for having us. What do you notice is the common thread amongst them? You mentioned that they want a better life, but what is it about their life that they want to be better?
Well, I think it's different for everybody who comes through the doors. I mean, we're so blessed. I mean, in one group class setting, we'll have an 18-year-old who's a senior at a local high school, and then we'll have a 65-year-old who's a retiree. And we're able to work with all of them in the same environment and apply the same principles. So it varies for everybody. I mean, at its base, right, it's increased quality of life. Really, like we tell people all the time, we're a people-based facility, not a performance-based facility. I really don't care about performance metrics, how much you lift or how fast you do something. We're trying to meet everybody where they're at on their journey. And if what we do in here doesn't enhance what you want to do outside these walls, then we're not doing our job, right? So our main goal with everything, and I know I've said it a couple of times now, but is this enhance quality of life and increase longevity for people. We want people, all the years they have left, to be the best years. We don't want them sitting in hospital beds for the last 10 years of their lives, right? So, you know, we try to increase functionality for people, whatever that may be, if that's playing 18 holes of golf on the weekend, or, you know, throwing the baseball around with their kids. And you know, on top of it, there's the aesthetic goals and those things. But those are all byproducts of what we do. So yeah, that's a tough one to answer because everybody, I mean, you know, we have a lot of members and a lot of wonderful people who come from all walks and are in here for different reasons.
Yeah, I think something that's almost obvious but true is that everyone's coming in here with some sort of goal, right? So someone, there's a recognition of like, I don't like whatever facet of their life that they're in now.
Yep.
Or don't like it enough that they know it could be better and want it to be better so much so that they come in here and say, let's do this thing.
Yeah.
And I think that that yearning for growth is at least one common thread amongst all of them.
Absolutely. And you know, to that point, taking a step back, I mean, when people come through these doors, it's an intimidating environment for a lot of people. And I get that and I appreciate that. So they have to be, a lot of them, significantly vulnerable coming in here. You know, so how you embrace that and how you engage with them. You know, with my coaching staff, we talk about the idea of managing personalities. Because really, at the end of the day, you're in a group with 18 people, you're running them all through the same workout. You're creating some variation in it because you have to scale some movements or change some movements for some people. But you're dealing with 18 different personalities who had 18 different kind of days, who have 18 different kind of goals, and how I talk with you versus how I talk with somebody else is going to be drastically different. So it's we have, you know, our coaching 10, kind of our 10 commandments of coaching. And one of the main ones that we talk about as a staff is coaching with compassion. Mm. And understanding, you know, we're always coaching from the athlete's or from the client's perspective, right? You know, again, you have different goals, different ideas, different philosophies of what you're trying to do. So we always trying to approach from that perspective. So it's really, and it's, you know, over 15 years of running Black Flag, it's a significant challenge. You know, because people have bad days and they come in and they're in bad moods and, you know, or you get people who just are introverts for whatever reason. Yeah. And, you know, they just don't like to talk. They don't like to be talked to. And those are my favorites because those are the people, you know, it's a challenge to kind of break them down and get them to engage. And, you know, so I always look forward to those challenges. Whereas when I was a young coach, it was like, oh, so-and-so's here again. And now it's like when they walk in, I'm like, hey, baby, what's up? You know, and just kind of get them to crack a smile and let them know that, you know, this is going to be the best hour of their day, you know, when they come in here. So
anytime you can make something more personalized, people tend to gravitate towards it, right? And then especially when you're doing it in a sense of vulnerability, it makes it all the more prominent and
sure.
relevant for them too.
Sure.
As you kind of talk about this ever-changing dynamic, right? People are coming and going, their personality, every single day is going to be different. How do you stay up to date and informed on the new wellness ideas that are being studied and released and so forth?
Sure. First thing is I stay off Instagram. You know, there's lots of cool stuff out there and it gets lots of clicks and lots of likes. Unfortunately, it probably doesn't have a strong scientific basis. Fortunately, with, you know, almost 30 years in the field, I have a lot of experience. You know, not only my master's degree from John Carroll in the field, but multiple certifications through multiple different organizations, as well as lots of experience with different athletes of all levels, different people of all levels and experience. So that perspective allows us to draw from sort of different segments. Whether it's a strength conditioning bias, a high rocks or endurance bias, or even, you know, CrossFit bias. We can take things that have strong scientific principles behind them and then, you know, what we like, and then we put it into our own program. And on top of that, you know, being an active member of the National Strength and Conditioning Association, you know, I have access to all of the latest research coming out of there. And I try and stay fairly well read on the new trends. But, you know, we are strong advocates of our people should be able to move on some capacity like an athlete, you know. So we kind of skew a little bit more towards more athletic style movements, much more different than a traditional, you know, fitness facility. You know, all the rage right now are kind of boot camp style classes where it's just cardiovascular, you know, stations and all that kind of stuff. The problem is when you look at the science, that's only one facet of fitness and wellness.
Yeah.
you know.
I feel like when you say the athletic piece, you don't just want an athlete that can just run forever. You need an athlete that's also built, that has going to hold their ground. There's so many more areas than just one.
Yeah, well, and when you look at the new emerging science, you know, being strong and having high quality muscle is as valuable as having great cardiovascular fitness and a high VO2 max. So, you know, we need to make sure that we're training those things. So, you know, just doing cardio circuits every day, all day, it's probably not. Is it effective? Yes. Is it increasing wellness? Yes. Is it the most effective? No. Is it optimal? No. And from our perspective, our goal is to always create the most optimal program to maximize the adaptations to all those things, whether it's building strength, building high quality muscle, cardiovascular fitness, mobility, stability, being able to absorb force, create high rates of force. I mean, the reason somebody gets injured when they step off a curb and rolls their ankle is because they lack the ability to absorb high forces. So if we're not training the ability to absorb high forces within what we're doing, then we can't call ourselves a functional fitness facility, right? All the term functional, right? Which is a bogus term, you know, it means nothing and everything at the same time. But I can make an argument that a barbell curl is as functional as any crazy movement you'd see on Instagram.
Sure.
You know, even more so, I would argue that it's probably more functional than watching somebody balance on a basu ball, you know, juggling. That's kind of how we approach everything and try and stay in alignment. And as a staff, we meet on a routine basis. Very fortunate, like my team comes kind of from all walks. So we have a bunch of different mindsets and we're able to collectively come together and discuss, you know, hey, this works, hey, this doesn't work. And then try to be able to rationalize or to defend it, you know, so.
Now, Tom, your athletic career was one that was of great optimal performance. As we mentioned, you're an inductee at the Carroll Hall of Fame. What practices did you put into place that allowed you to compete at such a level?
I mean this sincerely, I was too stupid to know any better. You know, I come from a very hardworking family, and I grew up in the Rocky generation. So, you know, the only way to get better is just to do more and to keep going and to keep going. And when everything hurts and you feel terrible, you keep going. Now, what I know now about training and performance, that's the dumbest thing you could do. But, you know, back then it was just this, you know, burning desire I always had. I always wanted to go to the league. You know, that was always kind of my goal. I started at Villanova University out of Ignatius, and that didn't work out. And so when I got to Carroll, it was, you know, that fire was even more aggressive, to the point where when I first transferred in, I mean, I didn't talk to anybody probably for most of the semester. I mean, I go to practice, keep my head down, do what I got to do. And my whole mindset was just, I don't care about anybody. I don't care about anything. Like, this is the goal, is to win a national championship and get into the NFL. And neither of those things happened, but I it was to a detriment, to the point where now I have physical issues that are as a result of kind of driving, you know, through pain and, you know, just pushing to the point. There was success that came with it for sure. Mm-hmm. But I would give up the personal accolades and all that kind of stuff to have gotten a national championship with my teammates. I tell my kids all the time who are, you know, college athletes right now, you know, to enjoy the experiences and to enjoy the team, you know, the wins and losses. You know, I don't remember a lot of games, but I remember the experiences with the guys before and after, you know, all of that kind of stuff. I don't know. It's been a heck of a ride to get where we're at. But I'm supposed to have double knee replacement.
Oh man.
And I've been putting it off and just kind of getting by. But I mean, it's as a result of, like, you know, the 1 year Carroll had a partial ACL tear, and the doc's like, you're not playing, and I'm like,
watch me.
Yeah, and I mean, to the point, like, literally, I was like, look, man, like, I don't know what I got to do, and the doc was like, made me sign a literal personal liability waiver against him, releasing him if I did tear my ACL. So I had to miss 2 weeks, and we're playing Mount Union the following week. So Doc's like, and the 2 weeks I had off, I would jump the fence in the stadium and I'd run sprints at night at 10 o'clock at night when nobody was there to make sure that I was in shape, ready to go, you know, when we played Mount Union. So, you know, silly things like that, I think on the surface sound cool and like you're, you know, David Goggins and nothing's going to stop me and this and that. But I look back on it and it's like, at the time, you're a badass, but now it's like, yeah, maybe I should have rethought. There's smarter ways to do it.
So Tom, what's the balance? What's the appropriate balance? Because there is such a, like that Hall of Fame mindset that you exhibited really drove you, right? But now you're also advising your own children, hey, enjoy the ride a little bit more than maybe it sounds like you were letting yourself at that time in their shoes.
Yeah, that is a phenomenal question. I don't know the answer. I you know, my kids are obviously very different than me. In the mindset, and I try and get them to kind of do as I say and not as I do. I mean, and I think you're learning this as you build this podcast and have had success with it. As you kind of get more success, you have to be a little bit more kind of maniacally obsessed with kind of continuing to be successful. And so I have a hard time finding balance. I do, and it's something that I try. You know, I'm like, all right, you know, I'm going to try it. I started the first of the year. I'm like, Thursdays, I'm off. I'm not doing anything. And, you know, that doesn't work. I made it about a week, 2 weeks. So it's really hard. But I will say, though, the one thing I do, and it comes from enjoying what I get to do for a living, is just enjoy the process and have fun doing it. I think years ago when you're building something and you're wearing every hat and, you know, I'm cleaning toilets, you know, and I'm setting the gym up at 2 a.m. and all those kind of things, it's hard to enjoy it. But as you get a little bit more established, it's difficult because you want to kind of keep driving and seeing how far you can push this thing. But I have, with the help of my wife and my children, kind of sat back and starting to, at least I'm still here about the same, but I'm enjoying the time that I'm here a lot more, you know. I just recently started working with high school athletes again, which I haven't done in probably 15 years, because I just stopped enjoying it. And now all of a sudden I kind of have this newfound love for working with high school kids. And so, but I don't know how you find the balance, man. If you figure it out, let me know.
For sure. If anyone does, throw it in the comments.
Yeah, right. And it is one of those things. It's like with my kids, I'm like, don't, you know, it takes some time. Well, I'd like them to work a little bit because they're like, guys, you need jobs. But at the same time, like with their athletic stuff, it's like, guys, yeah, this is going to come to an end. And, you know, it's such a small portion of your lives that if you're not enjoying it, find something that you're enjoying doing. Now, fortunately, they're all in positions where they love their sports and they've had good experiences with college. But if they weren't, it's kind of like, you know, find something to enjoy. I mean, and I do. I have regrets about not enjoying college more. You know, when guys were going to parties, when guys were going on spring break, I was like, I can't. I got to do this and I got to do that. And I, you know, because I didn't want to miss workouts. And they still, to this day, give me a hard time about not being on spring break with them at South Padre Island. So, you know.
Now, Tom, you mentioned your wife, you mentioned your children, almost in a way pushing you to reevaluate perhaps your mindset towards some of the grittier things with the job, right?
Yeah.
And now you mentioned you're getting back into working with high school students. Do you think that it was a lack of enjoyment, or do you think that maybe the mindset and the thought process towards it was not allowing you to enjoy it?
Yeah, I think that's probably a good point. You know, you get so driven to be successful, you kind of forget what that means. You know, what really is success? And you know, we're like any other business. I mean, we have to make money, right? So, you know, you're kind of driven by that, at least initially. And if that isn't part of what you're trying to accomplish, you're going to be in trouble. And I've known a lot of gym owners that were great trainers, great coaches, great professionals, but didn't realize that, you know, you have to be economically healthy. So, you know, when you're an entrepreneur and you're just starting out, that's a big part of it, right? I got in my bottom line, and then all of a sudden I have a staff of 8 or 10 people that are kind of relying on me, you know, for a paycheck. And, you know, that's a lot of pressure. And so when you add all those things up, and it was a maturity thing, you know, when you're younger and starting businesses, you make some immature kind of ego-based decisions. And so all of that kind of takes away from the enjoyment, right? So again, as I've gotten a little bit older now and a little bit more established and a little bit more relaxed, again, it has allowed me to kind of enjoy the process a little bit more. And not be so focused on the results of all of it. You know what I mean? And it's interesting, as I learn to enjoy the process again, the results seem to be coming. So.
Yeah, it's so funny how that goes, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it's seriously.
We get out of our own way a little
right?
bit.
Right? Yeah. I mean, you fight it, and then as soon as you take a step back, and you're like, oh man, this is great. It's like good things start happening, you know?
One of those good things that you mentioned was, again, working with high school students.
Yeah.
Originally, or one of the roles that I wanted to focus on with you is that you were the strength and conditioning coach at our famed alma mater, mm-hmm. at St. Ignatius.
Yeah.
What made it, and what was it that you did that made you so effective there and leaving such an effect on those students?
Oh, man. I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I had an immense amount of respect for the program and for Marty Einen, who, you know, was, as far as I'm concerned, you know, next to Coach Kyle, the man responsible for the state titles and the national titles and all the success they've had. And he was such a big part of my life that I just put everything I could into it. But you talk about massive shoes to fill and feeling, you know, pressure sometimes on a level that would just, because, you know, being an alum, you had a, not only did you feel, and being part of the glory days, you know, being a captain and all that kind of stuff, the amount of pressure you feel to make sure that these young men are successful is overwhelming. So you would just do everything you possibly could do. But again, it always came down to the kids. It was always, what can we do to make them successful? But I mean, I got to tell you, I mean, here I am, a young strength coach, just finished doing an internship at the International Performance Institute down in Bradenton, Florida at the IMG Academies. And it was part of the Bolitari Tennis Academy back then. And I walk in and I take over for Marty, and they were still doing the mile test for the football guys. And so here I am, a 22-year-old, you know, fresh out of college strength coach, just get hired at my alma mater, take over for the guy that I looked up to more than anything. The reason I'm a strength coach now is because of Marty. And I have to tell Coach Kyle that, you know, the mile test is obsolete. Nobody's doing it anymore. It's a silly, you know. And no, so how do you go in and sit down with the winningest high school coach in the history of the country and four national championships at 11 and say, hey, I know you're doing great, but there might be a better way to do it. But that's the beauty of being at a place like Ignatius, where they, I mean, he was like, Tommy, you're the strength coach. This is your gig. Whatever you, I support you, you know? And that's kind of the beauty of at least those years. It was kind of like everybody had the autonomy to run things the way they needed to. And now if Chico needed to step in and, you know, oversee everything or give his input, he certainly did, but he didn't micromanage. But I don't know. It was lots of long hours and, you know, it certainly wasn't doing it for the money. You know, you just had a commitment. But ultimately, to our previous point, I mean, ultimately it burned me out. I mean, I was 7 days a week, 365, mm-hmm. Sundays, off season, early mornings, because that was when we were starting to transition away from was just football to was like swimming and crew and basketball and track and field. And it was like, oh my God, how do we manage the space? And how do we get all the kids in here? So what's the answer? We get here at 6 a.m. We try and train before. And it's not, and I didn't have a staff. It was just me. So I'm, you know, running 100 kids through in the afternoon and 50 kids in the morning. And, you know, it was, and trying to teach classes. And ultimately it did kind of burn me out and push me out of the space for a little bit. But it was an amazing experience and a wonderful opportunity. And, you know, I certainly don't regret any of it. And, you know, would I do some things different? Certainly. I mean, I was a young kid, but, you know, but it was an amazing experience. And it's one of the, it shaped who I am today, you know.
I think we all have something about us that is just exceptional. And that tends to be what we offer when we go to a place. And throughout all of these stories, we keep hearing this resilience and this persistency part about you. It's interesting, though, you mentioned that you keep burning out.
I have a problem with that. I don't know. Again, it comes back to just that, you know, Rocky. I mean, I envisioned, you know, the Rocky mind. It's how do you take somebody who doesn't have the skills necessary to be successful, right? You just do more than them. And so that was always my mindset. I've had interventions a little bit here with my wife, and we have a friend who was a doctor who's working out of here. You know, my mindset was always like, I don't need to sleep. I'll grind, and that's how I get ahead on everybody. You know, all the fake kind of garbage that people spot out there, which is the opposite of everything a healthy person should do. Sleep is, bar none, the most important thing you could possibly do. You know, chronic sleep deprivations in with some studies is as bad as smoking. So, but here I am, you know, and the doc sat me down. He's like, man, you know, you're 45 years old, you look fit, but he's like, you're gonna be that guy that keels over at 50 years old because you're doing everything wrong. And he's like, and he really was like, what the hell kind of leader are you? And I'm like, what do you mean? I'm this and that. He's like, so you're telling everybody to do these things and this is what you need to do for health, which I know, and I'm doing the opposite. It's like, oh, you know, sometimes when it's right in front of your face, you don't see it. Mm-hmm. And it was like, okay, so I need to change how I'm living. And it's amazing when I changed how I was living, making sure I'm trying to sleep, taking care of myself, staying consistent, on point with nutrition, all those things, right? All of a sudden, I became a better leader, a more involved leader. I'm a better communicator with people, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So it's interesting. But yeah, I mean, again, I come back and I learned it from my dad, who was a hard charger, always going. And it's just kind of ingrained with me. I try really hard. You know, I, like everybody else, all the influencers out there, I get up and I journal every morning. And almost every day, it's like, how can I do less? And I never have an answer for it. But as long as I'm smiling and enjoying the process, I'm much happier now than I was, you know, 15 years ago or 10 years ago when we were grinding kind of to build this thing. So I guess it all kind of works out, you know.
You mentioned your dad.
Yeah.
Who has a food drive named after him at, again, St. Ignatius High School, which leads me to the point that the Jesuits, both Ignatius and Carroll Jesuit schools, focus on service. It's such an integral part of the formation that they believe in and, of course, value. How much has that shaped who you are and what your role is as a leader?
I mean, it's everything. I mean, it's whatever you do, if you can't give back, I don't know if it's worth it. You know, like I said, I was lucky enough to realize that my form of service wasn't going to be donating large sums of money or getting involved with food drives or those types of things. It was going to be serving people through health and wellness. You know, we have class here on Sunday, and you know, we call it the Church of the Holy Barbell. it's just, this is our way. This is my way, my calling, if you will. And again, when I sit back and I think about it critically or analytically, I mean, again, and that's why we look at it the way we do and we're so passionate about it, is because, like I said, I mean, there is nothing, there's nobody you'll interact with in your life that's going to have as great an impact as what we get to do every day. And if that isn't like the ultimate calling, I don't know what is, right? Like if I can take a woman who's been on blood pressure meds for 15 years, she works with us for 2, and now she's off blood pressure medication, it's going to add 10 years to her life, and now she can play with her grandkids. I don't know of a higher calling, right? And we have as strong, if not stronger, impact than their doctors. You know, usually you go see a doctor and it's because something's wrong.
Totally.
Right? Doctor puts you on a med. We find the root and we fix it. And those people put their faith and trust in us to be able to do that. I mean, if that's not the epitome of trying to serve, I don't know what is. So it's a little bit different than maybe what people that traditionally think of service. You know, whether that's committing time to help people out or feed the hungry or whatever the case may be. But we have found that, or I have found that the best way I can serve is through doing what we're doing here every day.
We both know that one of the mantras is this notion of being better yourself so as to be better for others. So I think that applies directly in here, right? You helping everyone else be better themselves then in turn allows them to go out and even be better for those people to be able to play with their grandchildren after they're off of blood pressure medicine.
Sure.
To be able to not need to have the surgery because they've rectified whatever that issue may be that allows them to be more present in their family and their work and their lives.
Absolutely.
I think that ripple effect is a massive testimony to the servile mindset.
Yeah, I think so. And I mean, I think one of the things that we discuss in here a little bit is the idea of respecting the opportunity. You know, we have a significant opportunity in here to create real significant life changes, and it's very important that we respect those opportunities. But as far as my father, I mean, he was the man. I mean, you talk about service. I mean, he did everything for everyone, especially the later part of his life. I mean, it's pretty much all he did all day was take phone calls for people who needed help with whatever. Incredibly philanthropic, you know, sat on the board at the Cleveland Clinic at Fairview Hospital. Westside Catholic, Ignatius Eds, Magnificat, Cleveland Central Catholic. I mean, just, and my mother too, both of them. Just, and my mother still is going, and she's still there, just made a big commitment to the Cleveland Clinic, and just very involved. I very much believe in you know, if you have some wonderful things given to you that you need to give back. And so my avenue is not those things, it's helping people with their fitness and wellness.
God bless both of them. They sound utterly tremendous.
They're wonderful.
Tom, we keep referencing this fitness piece, this wellness piece, as something that is great, which we both agree on. Everyone's going to agree with that. What is the biggest inhibitor then for people to not come and do this? Or better, why do people not spend time advancing their own wellness?
Oh, it's hard. Yeah, it's not easy. And, you know, we live in a constantly advancing world, and people are always just by nature trying to find the easy way. So, you know, in the Ozempic world now, you know, it's a lot easier to lose weight. You know, you don't have to come in and do the cardio. You don't have to come in and lift the weights. You can just take a pill or a shot and lose it. The problem is it's a short-term fix, right, for a long-term problem. Most people spend however long building up their intolerance to fitness. And it's because when we were younger, we're all taught it's a punishment, right? Well, it's when you played sports growing up, what was it? Run a lap, you know? So we automatically, as we get older, everybody kind of equates physical fitness with, you know, something bad.
It's a great point. I've never thought of that.
Yeah. So as we get older, it's hard to get over that mindset. And I mean, there is significant value in being a little uncomfortable, but people have a very hard time with that. And so they always kind of look for the easier way. And so unfortunately, and I'm not against Ozempic or any of those peptides that people use. I think they can have significant impact on people's lives who really need them. But it should be in conjunction with this kind of stuff. But yeah, I just think it's hard work, and sometimes, you know, in the culture we live in and the world we live in, sometimes hard work is frowned upon. But that's how we adapt to anything, right? Not just training. We have to create a stress. I mean, that's at the most foundational level. Getting stronger, getting more fit is all about creating a stress and then creating an adaptation to that stress, right? So I have to stress the system. Once I recover and I adapt, then the system gets stronger. If I never add stress, and I'm not just talking about stress in the form of working out, it could be anything, right?
Totally.
One of the things, my oldest son, who's in the Marines now, you know, growing up, he had anxiety. He was diagnosed with anxiety, you know, and ADHD and some other stuff. And it was like, it was a crutch. You know, it became this thing where it was like, if I asked him to do something, I can't do it. I can't do it. I can't. It's too much. I'm too anxious. And I'm like, I don't discredit those things as real things, but I also think oftentimes because things are difficult, people have a tendency to turn that into a bit of a crutch. And that resonates even as people get older, and it's tougher to get out of as you get older. It was amazing. He, out of nowhere, decides that he's going to join the Marine Corps. And I mean, as a father, you're proud of him because he wants to serve the country, but I also knew him, and I talked to him and I said, son, I love you, but you're not that guy, you know? And he has proven me wrong over and over again.
Yeah.
But my wife and I were talking when we picked him up from Paris Island after he graduated from Marine Corps boot camp.
Wow.
And it was interesting. The anxiety was gone. The nerves around people were gone. And it was because he was in a situation where he had to deal with it, right? He wasn't, you know, he didn't have any choice. And so sometimes I think it's very easy for people to kind of fall on, you know, the easy way out. But unless you lean into that stress, you don't really create the adaptations. Like if you want to improve as a person, you got to read, right? Or you got to study, or you got to, you know, spend an extra hour doing something. All not enjoyable, but it's the only way we get to where we want to go. And it's the same is true for fitness and wellness. But that's a tough first step for a lot of people, you know?
So. I was going to follow it up and ask you what you would have defined as the one action step for someone who's saying like, yeah, I'm that person. I'm falling into the inhibitor. I don't dive into this and make myself better. But it sounds to me as if, and again, tell me if I'm understanding you correctly, but your recognition of, or your advice would be to almost lean into the discomfort of it and almost to take it head on and start doing it day by day.
Yeah.
Like each day taking on a new boom, boom, boom.
Yeah, I think that in this fast kind of clip world we live in, you know, there's a lot of people out there that make a lot of money by telling you to lean into it, by telling you to get uncomfortable, by telling you it's all about getting up at 5 a.m. and grinding. And I don't think any of those things are accurate. And certainly not from a health and wellness perspective. Unless you're going to bed at 8 o'clock at night, do not get up at 5 o'clock in the morning on a consistent basis. But for the people that are struggling, I would say it's nowhere near as bad as you think it's going to be. You learn a lot about yourself. But yeah, I don't think lean into it is the right thing. The right way to phrase it. Just embrace it. You know, embrace. It's not even, it's just the perception of discomfort. It's not even the discomfort. You know, once people get in here and they go, oh my gosh, I don't know why I was, you know, nervous or scared or any of this kind of stuff. So, you know, I just think, I guess you could say leaning into it, but just embrace it and understanding the bigger picture, right? You're here for a reason. You're coming to Black Flag for a reason. And so you need to dig into that a little bit more and let that other stuff kind of go. It was a terrible answer to your question, but no. I get stuck, you know, like people live on like this David Goggins mentality, right? You know, who's going to carry the boats and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, you can do that kind of stuff in certain aspects of life, and you can do that type of stuff in certain aspects of training. But in other aspects of training, it's a terrible idea to just keep going. And I get it, and I understand it. But I think for, you know, it's all about finding balance between that, right? I think there's, you know, the younger generation I see is either one or the other.
Right.
You know, it's either they're kind of lazy and sit in front of their computers all day or their phones, or they're, you know, trying to be that guy. But the reality of it is there's only one of those guys. You know, and I mean, yeah, he's a bad man. I mean, but I don't know if that, I know that's not health, right? And that's not wellness. And so for most of us, we're trying to find a balance of all of it. You know, if you got your wife and two kids at home and you got to provide and, you know, they got sports and this and that, and then you go see your doc and your doc's like, hey, you're hypertensive and some other stuff, you really need to start exercising. And you know, it's how do you find balance of all of those things? I think, you know, people talk about stress. Stress is a killer, man. And there's good stress and there's bad stress. And you need to kind of balance. You want to add a little bit of stress, like we were talking about, but not so much where, you know, you're caffeinating at 8 o'clock at night to get through a podcast.
Tom was joking. He's like, yeah, I'll take a small. Neither of us got a small coffee.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I knew. I'm like, I'm not a very much so a night person, so a cup of coffee at any time is great.
But no, I hear you. I hear you.
Tom, we keep throwing around the word wellness.
Yeah.
And it's one of your practices here. It's one of your principles at Black Flag. What does wellness mean to you?
Well-rounded. You know, wellness is the idea that we're balanced through all aspects of fitness, and all those aspects lead to a higher quality of life.
When you originally opened Black Flag, you had to have recognized that there was a void maybe in this wellness space. What was the void that you recognized, and how were you hoping to fill it?
Well, we made mistakes early. You know, we were caught up in the CrossFit world. And so we were a little bit overly emphasizing intensity and forcing probably or asking people to do things that they probably physically did not have the capability to do, because that's what the CrossFit culture kind of gave us, their programming and their philosophy. And, you know, the crazy part is I knew from my background and experience and studying that it might not have been the most effective way. But we were fully invested.
So that was all the rave at the time.
It was huge. But we've evolved from that, because we've come to the realization that we're not trying to send people to the CrossFit Games. That is not what we're trying to accomplish. We are trying, like I keep saying, to enhance life for people. And do it through a specific type of training that's not going to leave them hurt or burned out or any of those things. So we've definitely evolved with our philosophy from CrossFit to athletics to now strength and conditioning, which is to us the most balanced kind of moniker of, hey, we're doing all of it now for everybody.
I think that's where this wellness piece keeps coming in, is because it is not just one dimensional, right?
Like, it is not.
That was kind of the extremism of CrossFit. It's almost like it was ahead of the times of where we are now, where it's either you don't do anything or you do everything so intensely.
Well, it's just, it was a fad. It was silly. And look at the some of the scientific principles of it. You know, I'm a CrossFit level 3 certified trainer. I took all their tests and everything. There's a very small population of us worldwide that have that designation. So we were fully invested. But part of the problem with it is their philosophies were sound, some of them. But it's the application, right? So, you know, they push this principle of constantly varied functional movements completed at high intensity across broad time and modal domains. That's the definition, right? And then when you break down the definition, you're like, what the hell does that mean? You know,
what made me crack up, because I couldn't tell you what you just said.
Yeah, but it's like, you know, what's functional? I don't know. We already talked about that, right? When you look at CrossFit movements and how they're done, I mean, yeah, there's a certain level of functionality, but they're very limited. High intensity. Boy, everything we know from science, high intensity is not the best. It should be part of a full training program where we have high intensity, moderate intensity, low intensity, very low intensity, and very high intensity, right? It has to be on a spectrum, because the only way you recover from high intensity is with low intensity. Again, creating an adaptation. If we just think we're gonna hit the same intensity every day, all day, you're gonna have some adaptation early on, but then it goes down, and it goes down really bad. If we don't understand the hormonal responses to training, the neurological responses to training, all these things that people kind of lost along the way with that eventually we were like, oh damn, like we're doing a disservice to our community by forcing them into this. So, and it takes some guts to step back when everybody's doing it and it's all the rage. And we lost some people when we said, hey, look, we're transitioning to this style of training. Here's the rationale behind it. And people now have adapted and you know, I think are flourishing with the style of training we're doing. So the evolution of it is, you know, it probably wasn't wellness when we were doing it before, to be honest with you. It was probably creating more harm than good. But we've corrected that.
You know, now
just by looking in the mirror and going, holy crap, why are we doing, you know, what's the point? You know, you'd have an hour training session and I'd spend a half an hour of it teaching a certain technique for a certain movement that's an advanced movement that I know nobody's going to do. And I'm like, wow. So I have an hour a day with this person and I'm going to waste a half an hour of this hour I get to try and teach something that really has no impact, you know, on their lives. So when you take a step back and you kind of look at it critically, you're like, oh, dude, what are we doing? But fortunately, people accepted it. They believed in what we're doing. They gave us the benefit of the doubt. And now, you know, between you, me, and your listeners and viewers, you know, we're kind of reaping the rewards of some of those people who have been doing long-term CrossFit. And they're like, oh, you know, I don't have to feel inflamed all the time or run down all the time. And so, and again, that goes back to kind of the whole point of this, right?
another one of those times, Tom, when I would imagine that you look in the mirror and are introspective, is when you're reflecting on it, what it means to be quote unquote strong. In all of the roles in your life, you are expected to be strong, both as a father, as a husband, as the coach, as the trainer. No one's trusting you in that role unless you are strong. But how would you, Tom, define strength?
I don't know. I've been fortunate my whole life, from peewee on up, I've always been kind of put into a leadership position. And I don't know why, really. But it's just, you call it character or integrity. It's just trying to do things the right way for people. But you know, I don't know. It's just kind of, I don't mind getting in front of people. I don't mind taking control. If somebody is supposed to be doing something, they don't do it. I don't mind stepping in. And it's been, to be honest with you, if I'm being candid, it's been somewhat of a detriment sometimes. I have a hard time delegating. And then accepting kind of that somebody's going to do it different, then it doesn't mean it's wrong. And I've started doing that more. And again, crazy thing, the more I've been delegating, the more success we're having. So that tells you a lot about my leadership. So I don't know if that's the right question for me, but I don't know. You know, just doing things the right way, handling everything with character and integrity, and everything else just kind of comes along with it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because I think there's so much more to strength than just the physical posture, right?
Yeah.
And I think it is showing up fully in where you are and whatever that role is at that time. And I think that maybe it is rolling up the sleeves and cleaning the toilets early on.
I think that's part of it. I think you need to be in, pardon my language, but you need to be in the shit a little bit. Like, yeah. you need to wear all the hats in order to respect the business. And I think, too, like when people see that, they sort of respect you a little bit more as a leader. But like, you know, physically at 40 years old, I was the strongest probably I'd ever been. Right. Now at 50, you're pushing 50, not so much, but I'm 10 times a leader I was at 40. Right. Just through experiences and dealing with people and understanding it and learning, the biggest, or not the biggest, but one of the biggest things of being, I think, a high quality leader is not being afraid to make decisions. You know, it was one of the things I respected about my father. You know, everybody referred to him as the boss. And the reason was because, you know, whether there was no gray area, right? I mean, if a decision needed to be made, he did not mind making the decision, right or wrong. And if it was a successful decision, it was everybody else that got him there, right? And I've learned that it is not about me or I, it's about we and us. So, you know, when I talk about Black Flag, it's usually we and us. I learned that from him. And at the same time, when things weren't successful, everything was on his shoulders. You know, he took full responsibility for it. We've tried to inherit some of that, those qualities, like make tough decisions, no gray area, right or wrong, we got to go. I don't like to say hate. Marty Ina would be so mad at me right now that I said hate. I dislike I dislike not having a plan and executing it. And so if that means tough decisions need to be made, then tough decisions, and if tough conversations need to be had, then tough conversations need to be had. But the longer you put it off, the worse it's going to get. But in terms of being, you know, and evolving as a leader, I don't know, I just keep showing up every day, you know?
Two of my favorite quotes, one of them is by a speaker, and he always says, you know, you don't have to just be a nice guy, you gotta be a good man. And mm-hmm. part of that is doing the difficult things, doing the right things mm-hmm. right. And one of my other favorite quotes that reminds me of what your father would say is Tom Brady. He's like, you know, as the quarterback, as the leader, he said, when everything goes well, you dish out the praise. He said, when everything crumbles in, he's like, you take the blame.
Yeah.
And that, I think, is the crux of being a leader. It's like you lift everyone up around you, and then when it crumbles, it's like, I could take the heat too.
Yeah, but there's such a beauty in that too.
For sure.
You know what I mean? You talk about, you don't learn anything with the successes, you know? When you mess up, when you buy a second location and it crumbles, that's a learning experience. And you're sitting there at night going, all right, how am I going to get this going? How am I going to revamp, right? There's two ways you can go, man. You can sit back and sulk and say, I messed up and I suck and this is terrible. Or you say, all right, look, this is the reality of the situation. Take the emotion out of it. What do we have to do to execute this plan that we're going to put together to be successful? And fortunately, you know, we've been able to do that, you know, over the last 15 years. But without those kind of mistakes and those kind of, you know, well, those kind of late nights sitting there going, holy hell, we're not going to get through this. And it's like, whoa, whoa, whoa.
We got
you know, yeah, right. You didn't put in this much just to let it go. And so even right now, the business is evolving where I want us to be in a position 10 years from now where I can pass off the business and Black Flag is still going when I'm long gone. We've worked far too hard and too long. And if that means expansion, if that means new business opportunities, great. But, you know, the hard truth with businesses like ours is you have two options. You can sell to somebody in-house if you want to get out of it. But there's no value of it outside of here. You know, or you just liquidate. You know, you find somebody who wants to be a part of it and loves being here and training here, so they want to keep it going. Or you just close the doors and say, see you later. So we're working really hard right now on the inside to try and create a true strong business structure where we have a managerial team. We have a somebody who's in charge of our coaching staff and coaching development. So we can have a real strong program for a long time.
When those moments hit you, Tom, where you open the second location and it kind of is a slap in the face.
Yeah.
Or when the decision needs to be made, what is it that keeps you grounded and provides you clarity on those?
Oh man, it's the realization that you suck. Like you're not as good as you think you are. You know, you think, oh man, we're doing great. We're gonna open a second location. We open a second location and it's like just bad. And then, you know, so it's just, I don't know, being stupid enough to kind of keep going and work through it.
So it's a humility almost, Tom, right? Like this.
Yeah, but you got to be humbled.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You have to have those experiences to be humbled. I mean, you know, I mean, I thought I was going to the NFL and I had, you know, phenomenal college career at John Carroll and all everything and played in the Aztec thing. And, you know, I got invited to a bunch of workouts and they all said, you know, you're good enough. You're just good enough to not be good enough. And I mean, so you're humbled, right? And it's like, okay, back to the drawing board. What's my next phase? And so without those experiences and being humbled, you know, this doesn't happen. You know, if that thing goes gangbusters and we continue, you know, to grow, maybe I'm not as strong a leader as I am now. Maybe we're not as successful in different ways. But, you know, there's a reason you go through those experiences. And unless you're humbled and mature through it, you know, it's hard to get there. But you have to accept it.
Yeah, it's a big kicker. You have to look at it and actually analyze it.
Yeah.
Right? You can't just take it at its value. You need to dive into it and see what your role in
absolutely
to be.
You know, you go through that woe is me phase for a little bit and you're like, oh god, I'm so terrible, this sucks, you know, what am I doing? And then once that gets by, then you accept it and move on and you know, and you have to accept too that like you could do everything right and it still may not work, you know. And fortunately, knock on wood, we're you know, I don't know if we're doing everything right, but, you know, people seem happy and we're helping people change their lives. So
I think similar to situations that we derive some truths from, I think that we derive certain aspects of ourselves from others, which I think is why a gym like this and this type of setting really works, is that it's like the strength in numbers notion. Who in your life have been some of the inspirations? You mentioned your parents, but who else has been inspirational to you, whether you know them or not, and what have they taught you?
Probably outside of my mom and my dad, my wife is probably the most inspirational person in my life. She had terrible hardships growing up and she's just the most resilient person. I mean, I sometimes I get woe is me and think life is hard, and then knowing what she went through growing up and her outlook on life now, I'm like, what am I doing? So, you know, she is definitely one of the role models for me. Marty Einen, you know, I already alluded to it, but, you know, he is the reason I do what I do. You know, just the way that he, and it was, you know, it was a tough love scenario with him. You know, but there was the right way and the wrong way. And if you don't do it the right way, there's repercussions for that. And so learning that discipline and structure from him and his style of coaching, I don't do it very much with general population in here because some of it wouldn't go over very well. But I'm trying to think in terms of my inspirations outside of that.
Real quick, while you think, the thing about the structure that strikes me with someone like Marty that you're describing is that it's the standard. It's a standard of excellence.
It was a standard, yes.
And I think that's like when we say the right way and the wrong way, when we say the right way, what we mean is that there's a standard of excellence, and anything short of that is disrespectful to yourself and everyone else that's working towards that.
It's a phenomenal way to put it. And unfortunately, those standards nowadays, they're just tough to enforce. I mean, I had the opportunity to become the strength coach recently at another high school, local high school here. And I flat out asked the guy who offered me the position, I said, look, am I going to be chasing kids? Or can I create a standard and a structure of discipline that, A, the administration is going to support, and you as the coaching staff are going to support? And he was, you know, it's a good friend of mine, and he was honest. He's like, it ain't like that anymore, man. He's like, you can try and discipline, but I'm like, am I going to be chasing kids to get into the weight room? He's like, oh, yeah. He goes, nobody will be in there until midsummer, you know, 3 weeks before we start. I'm like, no, thank you.
Yeah.
You know, it's just not how I operate. And it's because of, but I think it's one of the reasons why, you know, success is come for us in our community. I mean, I think the way Marty Einen was with us created the success that we had through the structure. You know, there was just the right way. There was no other way. And if you didn't adhere to it, you know, you kind of got left behind, and that's the way of the world, you know. But I don't know if in the way culture is now, if I did some of the stuff that he instilled in us back then, I don't know how well it goes. So it's a tough sure. dynamic.
Yeah, things are ever evolving. I think back to, like, I love the stories of Kevin Garnett or Kobe Bryant that you would hear, like, those were some hard hitters, that there was a standard of excellence, and if you weren't meeting it and holding up your end of the deal, then you're going to hear about it.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And that was because they were going to uphold theirs, yeah. So darn right, you better uphold yours too.
Yeah, and I think back in the day, you know, that stuff was celebrated. And I think now that stuff is kind of frowned upon.
Totally.
You know?
Yeah, it's been a big shift.
So it's just interesting. Again, having, you know, kids that are playing competitive sports in college. And there are still some coaches out there that are hard chargers and, you know, and do their thing. But, yeah, I mean, the biggest influences on my life right now are my wife and probably Marty was a huge influence outside of my parents. As far as anybody outside of that, I don't know. I mean, there's lots of, you know, wonderful coaches out there and leaders. Coach Kyle, certainly. Coach DiCarlo at Carroll, you know, I had the opportunity to play for him. It was awesome.
Two legends right there.
Yeah, man. I mean, I got to coach, I got to play for and coach with Coach Kyle, which was, you know, awesome.
Yeah, that's cool.
Awesome.
Alternatively, Tom, what influence do you hope to leave on others that would be sitting here answering that same question?
I don't know. Wow. I should have known you were going to throw some stuff out like this. You know what I mean? When you sent me the text message about what this is about. What type of influence do I want to have on people when I'm long gone? I hope that people can take away from knowing me and being around me enthusiasm and passion for whatever it is they want to do. You know, one of the sayings with my staff is, if you're not excited to be here, why would anybody else be?
It's true.
You know, so I think enthusiasm goes a really long way. So yeah, I mean, hopefully people can take away, you know, hey, live life vibrantly, enjoy it, embrace it, and do it with passion, man. You know, attack stuff. If you're gonna do something, attack it. Don't just, you know, what's the Matthew McConaughey? Don't half-ass it, whole-ass it, right? You know, But yeah, I don't know. I mean, that's such a tough question.
It is. Because
I'm still in
it. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I think, but people are taking influence from you now.
So it's I hope so. I mean, I don't know if people, but my kids certainly.
Absolutely.
You know, I want them to work hard and have character and have integrity and enjoy what they do and smile as much as can. That was the best takeaway, and it was Marty Annan. I remember my sophomore year, we're playing in the state championship game. Now, back this is in 1992. They would only bring up like three or four sophomores to dress with the varsity back then. And it was a kind of a big honor because you got to put the paw on your helmet. You know, you're playing in the JV game, but you still got the paw on your helmet. Now, all season long, I don't play. I'm holding the clipboard and writing down notes for the late, great Nick Restifo, you know, taking the okay. writing the charting the plays. And first playoff game, the guys were kicking, returning kicks, muffs the kickoff. Coach Kyle walks down. Tommy, next kick, you're in. Panic, right? Everything. Go in, somehow catch the ball, do whatever. So we get through, we're playing St. Xavier in a state championship game. And all I remember, go through warm-ups, it's snowing, it's freezing at Fawcett Stadium. And back then, the teams used to go in the locker room and then the captains would stay out for the coin toss. And all I remember is sitting in the locker room going, please don't win the coin toss. I don't want to, you know, because Dean Lamoran was the other guy who was all state, the other kick returner, so I know they're going to kick to me. And I'm like, don't win the coin toss. Don't win the coin toss because I don't want to be, you know, catch the opening kickoff. And so we're standing in the locker room. Coach Kyle gives us a phenomenal speech. We're standing in the locker room. We're getting the ball. So I'm like, oh, my God, just don't drop it. Don't just drop it. And I am, you know, 16 years old, terrified. I mean, terrified on a level. And Marty Einan walks over to me and he goes, hey, Tommy. Yeah, coach. He goes, smile. And sure enough, big grin, everything calmed down. And his message was, hey, man, like, you love this. Enjoy it. Like, yeah. These are the opportunities that you have worked your butt off to get to. Don't forget to embrace it and enjoy it. And it's the same thing. And I take it with me everywhere I go. Everywhere I go. That message and the message, you know, Coach Kyle was always celebrated. You do all this work, you put in all this effort, don't forget to enjoy it, man. Don't forget to have fun doing it. And to me, that's the biggest message, maybe going back to your point, like maybe that's what I want people to take of it, is, you know, you're doing all this stuff to get to a point, either because you enjoy it or because you want to do it. But like, make sure that you take that time to sit back and smile. But I mean, to this day, I mean, you talk about something that sat with me, and then it became kind of our thing. Like before every game, Marty would walk over and, hey, Tommy, remember to smile. And it just stuck with
me. So good.
It is phenomenal. It's just the littlest thing. But it was like, he's right. Like this, I busted my butt. I'm ready.
Mm-hmm.
You know, give me the ball.
It's one of those scientifically proven things too. Like you can't smile. Everyone can't smile without having a shift in their demeanor.
Yeah.
It's impossible.
Yeah.
Like you cannot physically do it.
No doubt.
So it's so, like people, like that whole fake it till you make it idea is so prevalent because if you just smile, you're one step closer to where you wanted to be going in the first place.
Absolutely.
Which in that case is catching that ball.
Absolutely. Yeah, so it's little things like that. Maybe that's what I want people to take away, you know, is, man, that guy loved what he did. You know, and
Tom, did you catch the kick too?
I mean, I did.
Okay,
I did.
I'm on the edge of my seat still.
I did catch the kick, and we ended up winning the game, and it was the second of a 5-year run at that point. Yeah, yeah. So I don't know, but yeah, those were great memories.
As you leave that influence, you leave the influence of inspiring people to love what they do, to smile. What do you see as your end game, as the end game for the gym, as the end game for your involvement in wellness and training and all of it?
I think the end game for me would be able to sit back and, you know, when I'm 60 years old and I guess sort of retire and watch the gym continue to thrive, you know. I just think what we do here is too valuable and too important for people just to let it go away. So yeah, I mean, that's my hope is to, you know, spend time traveling a little bit, and just take a step back and, you know, hopefully keep this place alive and going.
When you inject that energy into the people that work with you,
that's what happens.
I mean, that's
people
the other,
carry
you know,
that on.
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, you know, but it, again, I think of my father. You know, he when he sold his company, he still couldn't slow down. You know, it actually kind of drove him crazy that he didn't have stuff to do. And now, fortunately, our family has a real estate company that is able to work at. But, you know, it just, and so that's my fear, right? Even now, as I start to delegate, it's like now I'm adding a new program to what we do and, you know, adding more coaches and, you know. So I don't know. Hopefully, it's in my DNA just to slow down at a certain point. But to your point, I do want to enjoy life a little bit more and work a little bit less. I have been taking, you know, coffee mornings where, you know, I still get up fairly early, but now I sit on my couch and enjoy a cup of coffee before I get out and start my day and stuff like that. So it's good. Just learning to slow down, spend time with people that I love, spend time with family. I'm one of six kids. And, you know, it's very easy for families that big to kind of grow apart.
Sure.
So kind of one of my new things is, you know, reestablishing good connections with my brothers and sisters and their kids. We're working on that.
That sibling relationship is the longest relationship that we have in our life.
It is.
And it's a fascinating thought. When you talk quantity, it is second to none.
Yeah, without a doubt, right? Time is our best commodity.
In the vein, in the light of you talking about slowing down and appreciating life, leads perfectly into our closing litany that we do at Chats with Clark. We have five questions that every guest answers. The first one's about gratitude. Should be a layup for you here, Tom. I mean, given everything we've just talked about, my contention is pretty simple. I think that people who live with gratitude on their hearts, on their minds, and live and carry that out have better lives than those who do not. Straightforward.
Yeah.
What role, Tom, does gratitude play in your life?
Pretty dang important. I am grateful. I've had so many blessings in my life. It's hard not to be grateful. You know what I mean? So gratitude's a pretty important part of everything that I do. I mean, even when times were tough, you know, like we were talking about, as you look back, you're grateful for those times. So, I mean, I'm grateful for everything I have in my life, for the people I have in my life, for the community I get to be a part of every day, for the leaders that we have in this community. Yeah, so gratitude's a pretty big part of it.
If you're starting each morning with a journal, I'm sure that gratitude has to have a...
Yeah, it's usually like, what am I doing wrong and where can I fix it? But
That's great. In a way, that's gratitude too,
yeah, right?
And it's a way of like, man, I know I've been given these great gifts and talents. I got to be using them. So where am I not using them? And where can I be using them better? There's a grateful piece in there too.
Sure, sure.
The second question, Tom.
Yeah.
Do you have any regrets in your life? And if so, what have they taught you?
Yeah, I have lots of regrets in my life.
Okay.
They have taught me that things aren't always better on the other side. To take my time in making decisions, understand the impact that decisions are made, how they'll impact other people's lives. Don't let people dictate how you want to live your life. Yeah.
Those are great.
Yeah.
A lot of intentionality I'm hearing in all of that.
Yeah, yeah. I have some pretty big regrets.
Do you want to dive into it, or would you rather?
You know, transferring from Villanova is a big regret. You know, it was a situation where things got hard, and I, instead of just dealing with it, it'd be interesting to see where my life turned out. Mm-hmm. If I hadn't have left Philly and, you know, again, I love John Carroll. Had a great experience there, got wonderful friends there. But was it the easier of the two routes? Yeah. You know, I probably wouldn't be in the Hall of Fame at Villanova. You know what I mean? And not to say I had to go out and perform and had to do all the things that I did. But I regret taking the easier route when things got tough. And it took me a long time to work out of that mindset and to get over the fact that I kind of quit on myself and quit on the situation because I had what I perceived as, you know, unfair treatment. Regrets with the relationships, regrets with, you know, situations with the kids, you know, all of those types of things, regrets with how I handle situations in here. But again, you know, as crummy as they were at the time, they're all learning experiences and they're things that I've tried to take away. But I mean, I'd be lying to you, I say, if there aren't times still to this day where I don't wake up in the middle of the night thinking, damn it, I wish I wouldn't have, you know?
Mm-hmm. I keep hearing that when the going gets tough, you it's inspired you to keep on going. And in a way, it almost sounds like you grab the reins now. And you're
what's the alternative?
Yeah. Well,
you know what I mean?
Apparently the regret for not going through the toughness.
Yeah. But I mean, look, at my kids are happy. They all seem like they're doing well. They got good relationships and they all seem to be thriving. My wife's happy. We have a wonderful gym environment. So sometimes you got to go through the fire to kind of get where you want to go. Right.
Absolutely. Tom, I think that life's a gift. And in that thought, I think that it's important to have something on your calendar that you're looking forward to, because I think it creates just an excitement and something joyful that you can just know is going to be coming your way.
Yeah.
What's on your calendar, Tom, that you're looking forward to?
I am co-celebrating my birthday with my sister, Chris, who's turning 60, and I'll be turning 50.
Oh my gosh,
so we're having a big shindig with the family.
Heck yeah.
For my 50th, my brother is taking me to Vegas to see Metallica in the Sphere.
That's sick.
So that'll be pretty cool.
Happy birthday, too.
Oh, not yet. We're not there yet. the birth of my grandson, which is both terrifying and amazing.
No doubt.
It's just, you know, you're moving into that next phase of life, which, you know, at least mentally, I'm not quite ready for. So lots of wonderful things to look forward to.
Yeah. I can see there's a lot of big shift going on in your life, all of that.
It is. And helping the kids kind of navigate moving into adulthood, which we're working through right now. So, that's a fun experience.
You know what I think is on that topic, you know what I've always told my mom this in conversation, like, I think going into adulthood, no one ever prepares you or talks to you about just loss that you experience. Not literal death, I'm saying, but like it's constant that things are ebbing and flowing from your life and coming and going, and that's just part of it. And nothing in your adolescence really prepares you for that.
No.
And then all of a sudden you just get whacked with it. And you're like, well, that was weird. And then you get whacked with it again. You're like, wait, this is going on more than once.
Yeah.
And it just keeps happening.
I mean, I just think about the evolution of like friendships, right? I mean, you know. Some of my best friends now, the group of guys that are all guys that I went to grade school with, who I hadn't talked through probably through most of college and probably for the last 10 years out of college. And then all of a sudden we just sort of reconnected. And now, I mean, we hang out all the time and families and the whole thing. And the guys who I was all really tight with in high school and even a little bit after college, I barely talked to them. So it's just interesting how it all just kind of evolves.
It totally is.
And it's not from any fault of anybody's. Correct. It's just kind of how life
it's
works.
How life works.
You know?
And it's all the more to just kind of appreciate the small things as you go, that gratitude piece of it.
But there's a beauty in that because, you know, those friends, it's still a brotherhood. I mean, most of those guys, if I haven't seen them in a long time, you know, every once in a while you see them. And, I mean, it's still hugs and how are you, man? And, you know, and that's a unique bond, a unique trait. That I don't know if young people have or get now. And maybe it's just like that whole kind of Cleveland type of thing where, I don't know. It's just kind of this unique camaraderie I feel with, you know, guys, whether I haven't talked to them in 20 years, but I went to grade school with them or high school with them, where it's like, you can just, I just had a friend of mine who brought his daughter here to work with one of our trainers. I hadn't seen him in probably 10 years, easy. And I mean, he came in, it was big hugs, and we were BSing like we hadn't missed a beat.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's a beautiful thing, too.
It is a beautiful thing, too. It's total appreciation for each other, which I love.
Yeah.
And it is very Cleveland, by the way. Yeah. I agree with you.
I mean, I don't know. I don't know if, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just such a kinship. It's a brotherhood, like, you know, people talk about that, but it's definitely something special.
Tom, fourth question for you.
Yes.
When you lay down at night and you're reflecting on the when you lay down at night, Tom, and you're reflecting on the day that you just had, what is it that you hoped to have brought to the world that day?
I hope I had an impact, you know, or made a difference in somebody's life. That's pretty much it, you know. I hope that my kids are healthy and happy and everybody's doing good, but I hope I had a positive impact on somebody at some point during the day.
I think that's an awesome nudge to our audience too. Like, we all have that opportunity. You've created it and harnessed an environment now where people come to you and you get the opportunity to have an impact on them in a space that is very impactful. But very much so is that the truth for all of us too. When we go out into the world, we interact with people all the time where we could be having that impact as well. When it's at the end of our day, we're like, hey, I think I had an impact on that person.
Yeah.
I think it's a great nudge to our audience.
Yeah, you hope so. I mean, just greeting somebody, You don't realize. I mean, it can impact people in such a profound way.
Totally.
Using their name,
that's such a big one.
The best sound in the world to anybody, right, is their own name. So, you know, just calling somebody out from across the room. I tell you, one of the things that I've been doing, have you ever seen a movie called Patch Adams with Robin Williams?
Yes.
Old movie, right?
Yes.
So they do an experiment where they say hi to people and they smile at people to see how they react, mm-hmm. right? And so kind of like now, whenever, every morning I go to the get-go up here to get my cup of coffee. Get Up and Go blend if you haven't had it. Got it. It's the best.
I'm going to have to get out of the way.
Yeah. Get out of the way home. But so now, like, my experiment is, like, I always hold the door for people coming in and out. And I say good morning or hi. Just to see how they'd, react. Some people, they want to tell me to F off.
Yeah.
And then some people are like, well, thank you. Good morning. How are you? You know. And then I've had full-fledged conversations with people standing at the coffee station.
That is awesome.
You know, tell you about life and all that kind of stuff. So I feel like that's something, obviously, in a social media world, you know, the lack of human connection is, it's brutal. And it's only going to get worse. I mean, that's one of the things, one of the benefits of in here is we're kind of, you know, we're kind of AI resistant in the sense that what we do and the application of what we do, AI probably won't be able to do. I'm sure at some point there'll be robots doing it for everybody, but...
weights aren't going to lift themselves, so...
Right, yeah, exactly, exactly. So, so we get that. I mean, I get to have interpersonal communication with people like this every day. No phones, no whatever, and it's probably the only hour of a day that people come in that they don't have their phones.
Right, truth.
You know what I mean? So it's an interesting dynamic.
There's such a rise in that field now. There's dinners that are having it. There's parties that are having it. A lot of shows are doing that where you can't bring your phone.
Yeah.
I think it's super cool.
Yeah.
It's a forced focus, but it is what it is. You got to do what you have to do.
Whenever we have family dinners, it's, phones away. I don't let my kids do it. It drives me crazy.
Tom, my final question for you.
Yeah.
Is there any piece of advice you would offer to a specific sector of the audience or the audience abroad?
Any type of advice. Move every day. Do something. Go out for a walk. Do something. Not a big deal now, but you'll thank yourself when you're 80 years old and you're mobile. The other thing is enjoy it, embrace it, live it. You know, it happens. Life moves so quickly. It's very interesting. My perspective as I move, actually, when I turned 49, the perspective changed significantly. Because I had the harsh realization that statistically, I only have about 25 years left. And that is a mind F.
That's it? 74?
74, 75, yeah. It's kind of, maybe it's a little bit more than that. But, like, my father passed away at 75. So, like, that is a very real epiphany. So it's amazing when you have that perspective, it's like, oh, maybe I better take that trip. Maybe I better, go to that game because it's all going to be gone in, a blink of an eye. I mean, what did my sister say? The days are so long, but the years are so mm-hmm. fast, right? Like, it's just, so that perspective has allowed me to kind of be like, all right, man, like, maybe we better have some fun with mm-hmm. this before mm-hmm. it's all said and done. Now, hopefully, with everything that we're doing and taking care of ourselves, we'll get some more years out of it.
Totally.
But, the reality of it is, life expectancy is that. So it's like when you have that perspective, it's like, turning 50 this year, becoming a grandfather. In my head, I'm still 27 years old, and kicking ass. But the reality of it is now I'm a 50-year-old grandfather.
Yeah.
Who's only got 28 good years left. Like, you better start living.
Better start living.
The
movie Good Will Hunting.
Yeah.
I think that's what makes it, that perspective in that movie is what I think makes it so exceptional. It's just, hey, Will, you got to live.
Yeah, you got to do it. You got to do it, man.
Tom, I can't thank you enough. It's been a
really... I appreciate it. It was wonderful.
Yeah, really remarkable conversation.
Thank you.
It's awesome just to hear all the stories that you've had and then for each of our guests. And our audience is going to appreciate this
I hope so.
Tenfold. So,
I hope so
to our audience, if you haven't hit the subscribe button, I don't know what you're waiting for. We keep delivering you these top-tier conversations that you keep tuning into, so just hit that subscribe button anyway.
This is Tom Rini. He was our guest on episode 78. He exhibits that Hall of Fame mindset, which really teaches us how to live in the moments and to do it with passion in a way that is both as a leader and servile in and of its very self to validate those around us. I'm your host, Joe Clark, signing off of episode 78. Check out more from Tom and me in the description below or in the pinned comment on YouTube, and we'll see you next time. Thanks for listening.